Our next speaker, our final speaker, hails from the state of California. He's been very active for many, many years in carrying the message behind the walls. To those AA members who, because they're confined, can't come out and come to groups and get it the way most of us can. He asked me to say simply that he's a member of the Big Book Group in Lakewood, California. I think I'm probably one of the very few who's never heard him speak, and I'm really looking forward to hear his story. Johnny?
My name's Johnny, and I'm an alcoholic. I'm very glad to be here this morning. I'm extremely pleased to be here fully clothed and in my right mind. Now, that doesn't make a lot of sense to a lot of people. A long time ago, I quit saying it to make any sense to anybody. You see, the longer I stay sober in Alcoholics Anonymous, the more necessary it becomes for me to remember from whence I came. And I don't want to forget that a little over 22 years ago, right now, I was crawling around on my knees in a cell in solitary confinement at a maximum security penitentiary. And because of a loving God has expressed himself through a program called Alcoholics Anonymous, it's no longer necessary for me to crawl around on my hands and knees like an animal. If I didn't get anything out of this thing at all, if I had nothing ever again, I could live with that knowledge for a long time. If I may, this morning, I'd like to tell you how I got to where I was 22 years ago. I worked at it. You don't just show up there someday and say, let me in, coach. This is what I'm training for. I want to end up here 27 years old, crawling around on the concrete floor in long-handled underwear, scratching at the floor and barking at the moon. No, what I was doing on that floor is the same thing I'd been doing all my entire life, up into and including coming into Alcoholics Anonymous. I was looking for something. And to make matters even worse, I didn't have the slightest idea what it was I was looking for. But whatever it was, I didn't have it. I've always known that. I've always known that there was something wrong with me. I didn't know what it was. There was just always something different. I just never felt that I belonged wherever I was. I was always a little bit apart from, and I had a terrible thing inside of me that was consuming me. I always felt guilty about everything, and I had a tremendous hatred about that because I always wanted somebody to blame on the reason I feel guilty. And I looked around, and I had a perfect excuse. I had a drunken mother, a drunken father, four drunken uncles, three drunken aunts, and a drunken grandfather. And I said to myself, well, no wonder I feel different. I've been born beneath my station. These are the bad people in life. I don't belong around them. I must belong around the good ones. And so I took off to look for the good ones. And the first place I remember looking as a child was in church. I remember how excited I was on Sunday morning when my grandmother took me to church the first time. I remember I was going to go sit down because I figured that was the good folks. I figured I was just going to go over there and sit down and be okay, that I wasn't going to be different and strange and ill at ease and apart from anymore. And I wasn't going to hate everybody I was around, so I left the bad people that I felt that way around. I went over and sat around the good ones, and I felt different and strange and ill at ease, and I hated all them too. And I said, I wonder what's the matter with me. I don't belong around the bad ones. I don't belong around the good ones. I wonder where I do belong. And then I sat in that church and did something that I did my entire life, up until including coming into Alcoholics Anonymous. I sat there and waited for one of them quote and unquote superior people to tell me what was the matter with me. I sat there and waited while that man mounted that rostrum that Sunday morning in those long flowing robes. I wanted him to tell me why I was different and strange. And love and honor and respect your parents. He said you're supposed to love your brothers and your sisters, and I didn't. I hated them. I hated them for reasons I didn't even understand, and I felt very guilty about that. And
I became frightened to death sitting in the church. They were going to find out I was hating when I was supposed to be loving, and I didn't know what to do about that. Now I'm really in bad shape. I don't belong around the bad ones. I don't belong around the good ones. I finally go somewhere to find out what's the matter with me. The guy tells me I'm supposed to feel one way and I feel another. I turn to walk outside the door that Sunday morning. My old man stands at the door, shirt drunk and hungover, and he reached over and tapped me on the head and said, "Son, if you continue to go to church, you're going to grow up to be just like me." Now, there's a lot of things in life I wanted to be, but my old man wasn't one of them, because he was a drunk. See, I lived in a house where there were two drunks working, and if you haven't lived in that type of a nightmare, let me explain it to you. In a house like that, in the middle of the night, there's screaming, and there's yelling, and there's cussing, and there's flesh hitting flesh, and breaking furniture, and deathly silence. And the old man used to come down there and drag me out of bed every once in a while and start kicking me around. I never did it to my brothers, he just did it to me. I can remember laying there in that bed in the middle of the night as a child and wondering what's going on. I don't understand these things. I said to myself, what caused it? What put my uncles in those penitentiaries and my aunts in those houses on the other side of the tracks? What makes my grandfather burn down barns? What makes my mother beat up my father beat up my mother, and they all beat me up? I wonder what's going on. And somewhere way back there in the middle of the night, I don't know where it was, the answer came to me what the problem was. It's alcohol. That's the problem. I'm not going to drink. What do you do if you're weird? What do you do if you've been everywhere there is to go and you asked all the questions there is to ask and there isn't any answers? I'll tell you what I did. I took a drink. It was no big decision on my part. I just took one. It was the most fantastic thing that ever happened to me in my life. It went down there and just kind of tore the madness from me. That's what alcohol did for me. Alcohol took me from the black pit of nothingness, stood me onto the gray fringes, the business of living, and installed in me a sense of arrogance that said, "Damn you, world, it's all right. Maybe I'm not good enough to be around the good people, and maybe I'm too good to be around the bad people, but it's okay right here." That's what alcohol did for me. I remember my first drink of alcohol. I thought to myself, "My God, I'm like my old man." And from that day until the day I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, a little over 20 years later, I never took a drink of alcohol willingly in my life. Every drink I ever took in my entire life, I took it against my will. And I didn't take it because I liked the way it tasted. I didn't take it because it was a sociably acceptable thing to do. I took it for one reason and one reason only. When it got down in here, it did something. I took a drink of alcohol, and 3 days later, they pulled me out from underneath a bridge and stood me in front of a judge and sent me to the Hutchinson State Reform School. 20 years later, I took a drink of alcohol. They pulled me out of a car and stood me in front of a judge and sent me to 20 years in the penitentiary. And in between there, nothing changed. Every time I drank, that's what happened to me. The only thing that I can possibly put together 20 years later was this. 20 years later, there weren't any dreams left. 20 years later, there weren't any hopes or delusions or illusions that tomorrow is going to be better. 20 years later, I had the knowledge inside of me that tomorrow was going to be just exactly like today. And today was hell. And I wanted out of hell. That's all I can tell you. What I was using wasn't working. And I had been everywhere there was to go and asked all the questions there was to ask. I'd had all the fine things in life happen to me. I just spent 2 years prior to that running around to some of the better laughing academies in the world, interviewing psychiatrists. That's what I used to do. I used to sit around with my wraparound overcoat on. And we talk about things. They talked to me about my mother, and I talked to them about their mother, and they threw me out of the room. And then they took me out and wired me for sound. And that'll get your attention. And then after they reduced me to a state of childishness one more time, they reduced me to a state of childishness. I sat there in anticipation, waited for one of those quote-unquote superior people to tell me what was the matter with me. Why I was different and why I was strange, why I didn't belong anywhere in God's world, and what's the matter with me, and more important, what I was supposed to do about it. And the doctor said, "Johnny, if you didn't drink these things and swallow these things and smoke these things and shoot these things, you wouldn't have any problems." As sick as I was, I knew that wasn't the problem. See, my problem was I was nothing. I'd always been nothing. I come from nothing, and I was always going to be nothing. Now, I put something in me, I became almost. Not to a nothing. Almost is as high as you ever get. That's something. Now, I'm sitting there across the table from a guy, and he's telling me that the thing I put in me is the problem, when I know the problem is I'm a nothing. Not that. That's like telling the guy when the building fell down that the elevator was defective. And so the only thing that they did, the criminologists and the penologists and the psychiatrists and the preachers and the teachers and the lawyers and the wardens and the people who walked through my life 20 years of madness did for me was prove to me one thing only, that I was unique. That I wasn't like anybody else, because when I sit down around them, they talked about things that I didn't understand. They talked about the thing that made it okay, not the thing that was bothering me. They talked about my friend, alcohol. They talked about my friend, drugs, and they talked about the things that removed the madness from me. They never talked to me about the madness. And so when I walked out of the last nut house, I went back and I buried myself in a place that I hope by God I don't ever forget. I spent the next 2 years of my life with every waking moment of my life, I put something in me, and every time I was awake, it hurt. And 22 years ago, last February, they laid me down in a bed in the old Los Angeles County Jail. I weighed 128 pounds, and I was yellow, and I had my left arm and my right leg tied down. And there was a medical doctor standing at the foot of my bed telling me I was going to die before morning. He said, "Son, you're going to die. There's nothing I can do for you." And I told him, okay. All day passed and all night passed. He came back into my room the next morning. He stood at the foot of my bed. He said the same thing to me. I said, okay. The third day he came into my room, I had a terror grip me that I've never known before since in my entire lifetime. The idea came to me that I was going to live and not die. I was going to have to get up out of that bed and go to the penitentiary and come back out and start that rat race all over again. And God knows I didn't want to do that. So I laid in that bed for 18 days and 18 nights. I didn't eat, sleep, drink, or do anything. I just laid there. And one night, because I knew nothing better to do, I screamed out the only prayer I ever said in my life. I said, "Oh, God, help me." Now, I thought for a long, long time nothing happened, because there was no blinding flashes of light. Nobody come running down the hall with a dozen donuts saying, "We got an AA meeting down here." You know. The little bird didn't come in and drop the fifth chapter on my chest. And the only thing that happened to me was that I went to sleep for a little while. And I don't know how many of you ever had I've ever tried to kick a two-year heroin habit, but that's what I was doing at that time. Sleep is a blessed thing. So I got better. And the next thing I remember doing is standing in front of a Superior Court judge being sentenced to 20 years in the penitentiary. But that doesn't mean anything to me. That's the game I played. You win some, you lose some. It was a turn to walk out of the courtroom that day. The judge changed his conversation from me to a lady who was sitting in the courtroom. And what he said to her was the most damning thing anybody had ever said about me in my life. He said to her, "Lady, if you care anything at all about the child you carry inside of you, you get so far away from this scum, you'll never be allowed to lay eyes on it. He's a blood-sucking parasite in society. He doesn't have any right being around decent people. It's in my power, he is never going to be." And I'm walking out of the courtroom saying to myself, he's not talking about me. He's talking about my old man or my uncles or my grandfather or somebody. But he was talking about me. And I knew he was talking about me. He put into words what I'd been trying to hide from the world all my life, what I really was. If I could put that together and put it for a phrase, I would like to say it's this. It's the ungrounded, unnamed fear of the alcoholic. It's called fear of exposure, what we really are in here. That's what I hid from the world, what I was. That's why I drank and used drugs and did the things that I did. And the evidence of that was so damning, I went off and hid in solitary confinement for the next 9 months of my life. Because I couldn't stand to see anybody anymore. And that's the way I was when I stumbled into my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. 20 years ago, last November. Now, I don't take any credit for coming to Alcoholics Anonymous, because if I'd have known where I was coming, I wouldn't even have come. I wasn't an alcoholic. I didn't know what I was, but I wasn't an alcoholic. I didn't want to be one. You know why I came to my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous? Because the institution I was in allowed women to come in there. I came to my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous a little over 20 years ago to smell perfume. And I've been honking and sniffing around here ever since. I never will forget my first impression of Alcoholics Anonymous. It was written that to forget it is to be condemned to relive it. I remember going and sitting in that meeting. I sit down what I lovingly like to call my throne of contempt. I sat in the back row with my coat collar up and my shades on because I was cool. If I'd have been any cooler when I got here, for Christ's sakes, I'd have froze to death. And I looked upon the backboard and I saw two big gates and I thought to myself, my God, I've wandered into an anti-aircraft brigade. And I said to this clown sitting next to me, what is this? He said, it's Alcoholics Anonymous. I sunk down in my seat. Gangsters weren't supposed to be hanging out with those winos. If it had been Gangsters Anonymous or Over Hip Anonymous or Weirdos Anonymous, I'd have been waving at him. But it was Alcoholics Anonymous. So I sat around and waited for the women to tell their racy stories. And they got up and they threw me a curve because they had sort of a twinkle in their eye and a smile on their face. And they radiated something I didn't understand. Right away, they talked to me about God, and I got up and ran out of the room. When I came to you and you talked to me about God, I left because God was the reason I was. It wasn't my fault. See, God's the last thing in the world I had to blame for my dilemma. It was his fault. See, God, as I understood him when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, was a God who locked me up in an institution when I was 7 years old and still had me locked up there when I was 27. The God that I thought about, that you talked about when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, was the God who made me a practicing drug addict at the age of 13. The God that you talked about, that I thought about when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, made me responsible directly or indirectly for the death of my 17-year-old brother. The God that you talked about, that I thought about when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, wanted nothing to do with a thing like me. Until you talked to me about God, I left. But I kept coming to see you. I just kept coming to see you because I'd seen you. And seeing you, I'd seen the miracle. Seeing you, I'd seen the miracle. I didn't know that. I had no way of knowing when I said in my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous that you were the miracle of Alcoholics Anonymous. You see, without you, there is no miracle. There's no evidence of a miracle. They're just theory in you and I. The derelicts of the world cannot survive on theory. I can't. I've got to see. Because seeing is what I do. I become what I'm like. That's the way it is. Now, I got up one Sunday morning. I have no way of knowing what Sunday morning it was. It was a long time ago. I didn't know it was a day I'd lived my entire lifetime for. I had no way of knowing I was going to go sit down in a room and somebody was going to put the key in there and let me out of there, the gates of hell. I had no way of knowing that. If I'd have known it, I wouldn't have went to an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting. I'd have went to see the doctor or the preacher or the teacher or the lawyer or the warden or somebody, but I didn't know that, so I went to an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting. And I sat on the back row, a little guy that I knew did 23 fat years in the penitentiary, stood at a podium, Alcoholics Anonymous, and told me something I've never forgotten. He says, you don't have to live this way no more if you don't want to. He says, you just don't have to do it like this no more. You know, nobody had ever told me that. They've been telling me all my life, don't drink, swallow, smoke, and shoot, but they never told me how to live without doing it. And after the meeting, I ran up to him. I said, how do you learn how to live? He said, Johnny, there's a book called Alcoholics Anonymous in the library. If you go home and get it, I'll go home and pray that you find some part of you in it. Now, I guess he's prayed real hard, that little fella, because I've been a student of the book Alcoholics Anonymous from that day to this day. And the only thing I've ever found in that book is me. I haven't looked for anything else. See, I'm not looking for a way to sober up the world. And I'm not looking for a way to cure all society's ills. What I'm looking for is a way to live peacefully and comfortably and joyously with me and the loving God that made me. Now I'm going to tell you about the strange phenomena that take place in my life. It seems like to me that the closer I adhere to the principles that are written in the book Alcoholics Anonymous, and the more willing I become to share that knowledge in this fellowship just for the sheer joy of doing it, the more peaceful and the more comfortable and the more joyous I live with me and the God to me. Now, I'm going to tell you, I fought Alcoholics Anonymous tooth and nail when I came here because I was different. I wasn't like everybody else. And you see, I understand that. I understand the difference. I've been different all my life, and they had taught me to be different. So I said in Alcoholics Anonymous, I heard you say things I didn't understand, like you got to get active. I got up running around like a chicken with my head cut off. And smile at people, that's wonderful. And go back and sit in the corner and die. everything was about me. I just, you know, I didn't understand what was going on. And then I had to... I read that book one day and looked across the room, threw it across the room, and went over, looked down and saw the most simple statement I'd ever seen in my life. It said, "How it works." Once you know, I almost missed that. Anyhow, I found it necessary to fulfill the conditions of a program of recovery while confined in an institution in the next year and a half of my life. I sit down one day with a man and I spend 3.5 hours telling him about every rotten, filthy, corruptible thing I'd ever done in my life. At the end of that 3.5 hours, I walked out and sat down underneath a tree, and for the first time in my life, I heard birds singing, and I felt the green grass under my hand, and I was free. I was free in here. And I've been free in here from that day to this day. And strange things happened to me from that day to this day. And long about that time in my life, my vocabulary consisted of about four-letter words. Mother ran all the way through it in there somewhere. You know, I was a barber in the institution, and one day I'm cutting a little dentist hair, and I was cussing him. He was talking to me. And he said, "Johnny, if you ever get out of here, what are you going to do?" And I told him, he says, "You'll never make it." I said, "Why not?" And he says, "The minute you open your mouth, they're going to know where you come from." I said, "What's the matter with my mouth?" He says, "Nothing. You just open it every now and then." And this guy had to be the wisest or the dumbest man I've ever met in my life, because I had a straight razor in my hand. And what he said to me next was something that would take a lot of love to say. He said, "Remember," he said, "Johnny," he says, "do you know what cussing is?" And I said, "No, what is it?" He said, "It's a crutch for conversational cripples." And because it seems to me at this particular time I was attempting to work a program of recovery that's spiritual in nature, I said something to this man I'd never said to another human being before in my life. "I don't know anything else. What am I supposed to do about it? Will you help me?" He said, "Sure." So for a period of time, I sit down in a room with he and three of his little friends, and they word by word, sentence by sentence, paragraph by paragraph, fed me the English language. They loved me, these people. They loved me enough to stand my wrath when they corrected me. When they talked to me and I said things, they said, "You don't say it like that, Johnny." They stood the wrath while I rained it upon them. And then we went on about our business. Then one day they told me I could talk to them. They told me I had to talk to them about Alcoholics Anonymous because it was the only thing I knew. And at the end of that little session, they gave me a little statue about that high. Oh, I love that statue. It's the only thing in my life I'd ever gotten that I hadn't stolen. And I carried it, you know, I carried it wherever I went. They said, "How are you?" I showed them my statue. You know, it was a wonderful thing. I was just magnificent. My statue sold me so. Every time I fell down, I looked at my statue. The next Tuesday night, I went over and sat down with my friends, and the guy that owned the restaurant in town gave a talk, and they gave him my statue. Ooh, I hated him. I spent all week long laying up in that cell trying to figure out how they're going to break out of that institution, run 20 miles to town, break into his restaurant, steal my statue, and get back before they knew I was gone. You know what I learned from that very long ago when I was talking to an old man? I learned that anything that you can hold in the palm of your hand or touch, see, or feel doesn't have any value in God's eyes. That the real storehouse of my father's treasure chest are the things of the Spirit called peace, happiness, and joy. And to feel the way I feel about you. See, I love you more than anything else in the world. That's what I came here for, to tell you that. I didn't come here for any other reason. I just want to stand here and tell you that I love you. And what I am standing in front of you is a product of your love. Because, you see, 19 years ago, I walked out of that penitentiary. And I had no way of knowing what had happened to me in that institution. Because I went home, my mother fell off the step, blind drunk. I picked her up and put her on the couch and said, "Mom, I'm going to an AA meeting." She said, "Fine, I think you should." It took my mother a long time to get to Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm very proud to tell you that now she's a member of my own home group. And, you know, being the type of person I am, every Monday night I walk along there and talk to her. I tell her, you know, it seemed like it'd be a good idea if you newcomers did the dishes, Mom.
She just smiled and said, do your own time, sonny. But my life in Alcoholics Anonymous has been fantastic. It's a long, long way from where I was to where I stand today. It just is. And if I may, I'd like to touch a few touches with you. I don't understand some of the things that happened to me in sobriety, and I'm not going to dwell on them too long because they're very painful things. I don't understand them. But I do know it couldn't be any other difference to be this way. I've lived through things that I did not think that I could live through sober in Alcoholics Anonymous. I sailed along with everything in life as you're supposed to have, and one day I don't have anything, and I don't know what's going on. I found myself 6 or 7 years sober sitting in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous wondering why all these things were happening to me and why these people were getting theirs and I wasn't getting mine. One day I went to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous where my sponsor was talking, and I really believe I was going to leave AA. I believe that from the bottom of my heart because I wasn't going to drink or use nothing. I was just going to leave because you just were a bunch of phonies. And I went to this meeting that night and my sponsor was talking, and he was talking about things like family and jobs and happiness and things that I'd lost. And after the meeting, I went up to shake his hand and I couldn't get near him because there was a crowd of people around him, so I started to wander off. But the miracle of Alcoholics Anonymous happened that night because my sponsor came through the crowd and grabbed me. He put his arms around me, hugged me, and he said these words to me. He said, Johnny, God must love you a great deal. And I said to him, I don't feel like God loved me very much, Norm. He says, yeah, he never gives any more than we can handle, and those who are the blessed have the biggest load. And I promptly told him I didn't want to be blessed anymore either. And then he said something to me that I have no way of knowing what he meant, and I probably still haven't figured it out because sponsors have a way of doing that to people. He said, remember this, my friend. He gives big horses to big crosses to big horses, and he gives little crosses to guys named John. I went home that night and I got down in my little room that I lived in and I did something I hadn't done for a long time. I got down on my knees and I said a little prayer that I say every day of my life. God, relieve me from the bondage of self that I may be witness to those who see of your undying mercy and love. Amen. And I got up from there and it seemed like I'd been walking towards the sunshine ever since. Because it was shortly thereafter I was walking through a picnic in our area and a little blue-eyed angel gave me a piece of chicken. I want you to know that's the most expensive piece of chicken I've ever eaten in my life. But it's also the tastiest morsel that my soul has ever devoured because I believe, as I stand here before you, two things and two things only. I believe that everything that will be necessary for my fulfillment in life will be given to me effortlessly. I believe that as well as I stand here. I also believe this and accept it, that anything that will hindrance my fulfillment in life will be removed from me. I believe that too, because my life is testimony to it, because everything of God's world is mine today. Those children I was never supposed to see, the girl I was never supposed to see, called me to a hospital, let me sit there, let me pick up my grandson and hold it and let me cry. I was never supposed to see it. And all the good things in life of mine, all the things. And every once in a while when I get to thinking that it's weary out there and it's tiresome and I don't want to go, I get to thinking about your examples to me in Alcoholics Anonymous. And there's a guy sitting in this audience this morning, my original sponsor in Alcoholics Anonymous. He and I sponsored one another when we were new in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I remember standing outside of an institution in the blizzard one night, on a Thursday night, looking down the road, and somebody said to me, Bill ain't coming. There's a blizzard out there, John. He's got to come 12 miles. I said, no, he'll be here. He told me he loves me and he loves this program. And I looked up and I heard something. I heard bells. And I looked up and here came a horse pulling a sleigh. And old Bill dropped out of there and said, let's have some coffee and get the meeting going. And so when I get to thinking it's a little tough, I think about blizzards. When I get to thinking about how tough it is out there in that thing called life, I think about kneeling down in a room in an institution in a meeting one night and having a lady put her hand on my shoulder and telling me, I love you, sweetheart. And if you don't have anywhere else in the world to go when you come out of this institution, come stay with us.
And so for the first time in my life, instead of being beaten and kicked and abused, you touched me with your kindness. As I stand here before you today, I'm nothing more than the example of the byproduct of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. God, as I understand him this morning, is Alcoholics Anonymous. God, as I understand him, is the people in Alcoholics Anonymous. So I know there's God, and I talk to him and pray to him. You don't ever talk back, but I talk to him. But when I want to think about God and what he's brought in my life, I think about you. I think about the man who's loved me enough to tell me how I'm supposed to appear at an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting. I think about the man who took his time to put his arms around me and tell me that he loved me and I was his son. I think about the countless thousands of faces of people who walk in my life. And more than anything else, on a morning like this, I think about Myrtle Snyder. Myrtle Snyder was a lady who gave me the legacy that I carry with me this morning. When I was new in Alcoholics Anonymous, she said to me that my sobriety was a gift from God. And when I said to her, what do I do with my gift? How do I pay my God back? She said, what you do with your sobriety would be your gift to God. And I thought about that a long, long time. And as I stand here before you this morning, my sobriety is the most priceless thing that I possess. I put it in no jeopardy. I do nothing to put it in jeopardy. I live no way contrary to your teachings that will make it come in jeopardy. I treasure it above all things, and I'm the most priceless thing that's ever been given to me. And if I feel that way about my sobriety, it's my most priceless gift. As I stand here this morning before you, I would pray God for one thing and one thing only. I would only pray that my loving Father God would be as pleased this morning with my gift to him as I have been with his to me. Thank you.